talking of condolences, we are aware in the DTI that the director, McDonald, Nancy Kenzie's sister, also passed away during our constituency period. We were able to pass on condolences to him as well. In terms of the other members attending, we don't have any apologies. We did try to ascertain what the challenges were with both the Honourable Waiiri and the Honourable Mabasa, but unfortunately we don't have those, and neither does the Manco member, the Honourable Mabasa, have them. We also don't have an apology to Cope, unless you can give me anything there. We don't yet seem to have an official replacement in terms of an additional member, you know, not the full-timer, because we're aware that the Honourable Oriani Amatini is still on extended medical leave, but normally they just need an additional, you know, not alternative. We will get in touch with them so that we are able to have representatives from the IFP as well as the COVID. But unfortunately, we're not too sure what the challenge is there. Being as they are both intent on putting forward the input from their respective parties. But of course, DTI is always on time and before time, and we would like to welcome the DDG, Ms. Lodwa Ntuli, for being here and for her patience as well. I understand that he as well, am I right, also thought it was old assembly chamber. Then we did have here Mr. McDonald Wesley-Denzie, but I don't really see him unless my eyesight is failing. No, and we have just indicated that maybe the reason Mr. Makapea, Director of Regulated Industries, right, and Mr. Masha Maite, Deputy Director of Regulated Industries. Good morning. We also have Mr. T. Matubu, this is written here, so I'm not sure, Director of Legislative Drafting, thank you, and Professor Ned Thunder, Professor Chairperson Lottery's Board, and I do know that you are here, Professor. Thank you very much for attending. The Constitutional and Legal Office of Parliament, Mr. Langwab, Mr. Lawabo Silvana, is it Mr. or is it Advocate?
It's Mr.
And then we don't have the Office of the State Law Advisor here today. And then we also have Mr. Raj Naidu, the Parliamentary Liaison Officer for DTI. I want to apologise about the venue. Quite clearly we should have been in the old assembly, where there is more room, but the committee secretary has tried to get more chairs, haven't you? And I think what you could do to make one of those chairs available just in case you get a member coming in. Okay? And then the back people can sit the back. Very much a case of first come, first serve. I was lucky my chairs were very good. Thank you very much. No, we're not. Right. I think, gosh, I've got a real problem in my throat today. And I noticed on the news very early this morning that we were out at the O.R. Tambo celebrating all of the achievements and contributions of O.R. Tambo. And I think in some ways it's linked to the work of this committee that also has an international flavour to it through trade. He was a great internationalist and of course sought to bring together people around the globe to hear the plight of South Africans. So the person who can best espouse that cause, of course, is the Honourable Sue Van der Merwe, but we won't have time to do that this morning. but a great internationalist, and the message there is that it is so important to build bridges within our country and externally as well for peace and development. And having said that, I'm so pleased to see that the DA are here at Four Forks, because I know for some time now we have been striving to get the National Lotteries Amendment Bill on the table. And it is no longer a mirage, it is here before us. And I hope we will take it very seriously, because there are many challenges in 2009. I'm also very pleased that Professor Nevi Tunde is here, because he has over the years tried to develop some good government in this entity. Thank you very much. Having done that, perhaps what we can do at this moment is to adopt the agenda. There is one small change here. The tea break, when it comes, we will probably have it immediately after the briefing. And I'm hoping that's going to be at 20 past 11. And then at half past 11, we'll do the deliberations and be able to do announcements at 20 past 12. So this agenda will be completed at 12:30. Right. Can I please ask the DDG to brief us on the lottery amendment bill? Thank you very much, Ms. Holden.
Good morning, and thank you very much, Professor, and for allowing us the opportunity to be here today. It's always a pleasure to come to this. Always look forward to coming here. And honorable members, good morning. So I'm going to introduce the presentation, but before I can do that, I just want to also just recognize some of the team members that are here that we didn't get the opportunity to give the technical names of. We've got Solin Charlie, who's our assistant director, and Moike Kedebote, also our assistant director. And then we've got Mazumiso Botani, who's our intern. So we are developing the young ones, and we maybe you can absorb them in the future, and like you absorbed the chief director or legislative trustee. So please stand up, Arthur, and Mr. Miso, what is it? Can we also allow Donavo to stand up? That's the one that has been stolen from us, but we're happy to stand. So I'm just saying, Chair, that we've got a number of interns that we have got into the system here that we're training on. Thank you. So I'll just move straight to the purpose of the presentation. I think it's very clear. We just wanted to brief the committee. This process has been going on for, I think, quite too long, and there was maybe for other people that wanted the amendment to happen immediately. When the consensus was reached around 2007, 2008, I remember that there was a public outcry even from external stakeholders for the minister to initiate an inquiry into a lot of issues around the distribution of funds, which was problematic at the time. I think it would be called concerns at the time were ranging from applicants waiting forever just to get an acknowledgement of the fit of the application. But even when an application has been received by the NLB at the time, stakeholders had to wait forever just to hear whether it's being adjudicated or not. And after adjudication, some still had to wait for another year just to get the first payment. But I'm happy to say and to report today that those things are now being at the past. I think you specifically indicated that the role of the chairperson of the board in terms of just getting the institution in order so that we can deal with some of the issues that were challenges in this area that were not caused by the legislation, because we can always hide behind the legislation and say that there are problems with legislation. But there were a number of things, and a lot of them, that were caused purely by the manner in which the organization was being managed. So a whole lot of issues were issues that could be addressed. But I think the leadership team that is doing the energy under the leadership of the chairperson has really identified those issues and has worked tirelessly to just make sure that we bring the organization into where it should be. And I'm just here to report as well that all the discussions, we are not flooded with all of those emails that we used to get from the charity organizations and so forth who are waiting and not hearing anything from the organization. I used to deal personally with about 10 of them in a week. And 10 is a lot. And if you can deal with about 10 complaints from the institutions and from applicants, it was a lot. Right now, I mean, if you have to deal with anything, it's only like one in 6 months. And for me, I see that as a real improvement in how the National Lottery Board is now operating. So that addresses the issues that really have to deal with the lack of proper administration of the institutions. Then we then have to highlight some of the issues that are causing some of the challenges, but those issues that are related to legislation, because the legislation was passed in 1997. So there were a number of things that, you know, as you apply the law, you can pick up because these things are causing challenges, there's some cases and so forth and so forth. And those are things now that we need to be engaging this committee on. Yeah, I just want to also take the committee through just a background, just so that we can contextualize where we come from and where we are right now. I've indicated that in the end of 1997, the National Lottery Board was established to then implement this legislation. And I can say, I think the members are aware that the administration of the National Lottery Distribution Fund is under the eye of the National Lottery Board. So that is a very big fund. I think it's the biggest fund in the country in terms of just the funds that are available for food costs. And it has to date, you know, funded organization in the region of about 16 billion. And so it is a big fund. It's properly utilized, it's a fund that can make a huge difference in the country. And we are ensuring that that is going to happen, especially with the current leadership and the organizational structure that we have now in the National Lottery Board. We can see things are becoming more and more efficient, and I think the fund will be in a position to reach a number of people that should be reaching. Yes, that is not without challenges. We've got a number of other issues that, you know, as the popularity around the fund grows, the demand also grows. So, I'm sure that when the National Lottery Board comes to this presentation, on the quarterly report or some of the updates committee, you will be able to see how many applications now are there. So the popularity also increases the demand, but the fund itself does not grow, because you can only get a number of relevant issues. So that is not growing. So our effort will be very clear, how do we distribute distributed in a way that makes the whole thing happen, as opposed to just distributing as a health cost. Chair, in 2007, we did appoint Professor Trindle to look at the legislation since implementation, just to look at some of the issues around the performance of the institution and some of the challenges that the institution is also facing, but also some of the challenges that the, you know, over the implementation of the exercise. This, you know, came up with a number of findings that were very useful to us. And then also in this process, in 2009, when we, I think we did come to this committee in regards to inter-ethnic gambling. And this committee was concerned about the external gambling in the country. So in 2009, the Minister commissioned the Gambling Review Commission. And part of the mandate of that commission was also to look at the national lottery. So when we look at gambling, we also look at the national lottery. So that commission did proceed with this work, and in 2010, in September, it produced this report which the Parliament, Parliamentary Committee acted with. Also, Chair, during the time when stakeholders were complaining a lot, it was not only stakeholders that were complaining, but I think also departments that had got to do with some of the sectors that they were funding, that both as cultures as well as intelligence, like the social development ministry, they also had the concerns about some of the issues. So the minister decided at that time to establish a roundtable, which he was chairing, to actually get the issues and some recommendations in terms of function comfort. And those recommendations also resulted now in a working group that was created that comprised of the National Lottery Board, as well as the distribution agencies. And the reason why the working committee has been created is that there was a big gap between the distribution agencies and the National Lottery Board, you know, as a structure that needed to work together. At the time, they were working parallel to each other, and they were not really talking to each other enough to be able to be in a position to achieve some the required standards, and to ensure that their processes are done appropriately. So the working committee did work on some of those issues, and that's where some of the improvement areas were identified in terms of the administration, and then the improvement areas in terms of the legislation. So you identified in the process in the roundtable that the minister chaired, as well as the working committee that had to train some of those issues. And reports were produced, and ultimately, we then came up with a draft policy document, which was then sent to Cabinet, and it was released for public consultation and approved. So it was approved by Cabinet. And following that was then the bill itself. The bill was drafted, and it was also sent out to public comment, and it has been revised as well to take into account some of the comments from the public members. And it is the bill that will be introduced into this parliament. Chair, one of the things that also happened during this period was that there was a concern around the funds not really going to the intended beneficiaries. And the question was, where exactly do we know where the funds should be going? So a need assessment study was conducted, and then after that, in consultation with the board, the minister issued regulation, which provided some directives in terms of the policy area that the fund should be going to. So you see in those regulations, the minister did indicate that, you know, 50% of the amount available must move specifically to this particular priority area. Those priority areas are identified in regards to charities, as well as regards to us and sports. So there was some improvement as we go. So as we are preparing for the amendment, the number of other things that we have been in the process to try and address the challenges that were there. So this is where we are now in this committee, now proposing the amendment. We did receive a number of comments from the public. So obviously some of the comments go beyond the scope of the amendment, because we were not looking at overhauling the legislation, but we're looking at improving the legislation to make the distribution of funds to be more efficient and more effective. So the number of other technical amendments that we introduced just in order to get the legislation, I think, more user-friendly. But our scope was limited. But I'm sure, obviously, because Parliament has for the mandate to change the law. So if there are many other issues that arise in this process, we'll consider it as a statement and hear our views to the committee. So the policy has been adopted, and it carries on a number of issues. I'm not going to go through the issues one by one. I think the director will just see us through those issues in the presentation, but I just wanted to highlight the issues that were addressed in the policy document. The issues largely related, I said, it was simply directed to address the hiccups in the distribution. But some of the other issues then are things that we need to address, the housekeeping measures that we need to attend to. There are four issues here that I just want to emphasize. I think Article 11.3 is around the simplification of the process for distribution of funds. That means it's not from the application ultimately to the final payment. I think what we're emphasizing in the process is that the process needed to be simplified, because we discovered that over a period, the number of rules and requirements, that some of them were contained in the Act, some of them in the regulations, which were making the process even difficult for people that should be accessing the funds. So we wanted to ensure that the policy review does focus on the simplification of the process. And then the other area was in relation to, as well as bullet point 4, the categorization of grants. Part of the simplification was also to look at the speed with which the grants can be adjudicated. So we're looking at ways of assisting the process to work faster. So we're looking at categorizing the grants so that we know that if you're talking about small grants, you know, we're talking about a grant maybe that is like, up to 500,000. So your requirements for a grant up to 500,000 could not be the same as the requirement for a grant of a 10 million. So the process should be simplified, that you don't include a whole lot of requirements for a small entity that is only just looking for 500,000, maybe it's an orphanage or so and so. And then, but a big organization where you apply the same requirements, I think we just want to ensure that we apply the requirements in a manner that is risk-based as well, but also, you know, covering all the necessary risks that we can get. The other area that I just thought I should just touch on is the issue around the size of the board. I think it is important to mention, and I'll say it because I'm part of that board, so I can see it in practice. The board comprises of 7 members. If we look at the number of even committees for purposes of governance that the board should have, the board with 7 members is not able to have the right committees. So you find members being stretched in all of the committees, and that becomes a bit inefficient, and I think it's just impossible. So we're thinking that the size of the board should be increased to ensure that the board has got sufficient members, but also the sufficient skill set that is required to oversee this organization and to provide that strategic guidance. So that is the area that we thought should be attended to. And we don't think that is an area that should be problematic, because I think there is merit for that also in the corporate governance. And then the last part that I also just want to allude to, Chair, is the issue around the ESSEC funding. Often, people that do not know will always blame the National Lottery Board for not funding certain causes that they think are worth it. But you would not have an application from those people. You see a project somewhere, or you see a dilapidated school somewhere, and you think it should be benefiting from the National Lottery Board. If there's no application, the Lottery Board cannot even process anything. So that is how the Act works. Okay. The Act only makes funding based on application. If there's no application, then there's no money. So we wanted to ensure that now, with the amendment, we include provisions that allow for some level of can be based on some research that will be open and transparent to identify certain worthy causes that can be funded. One of the things that occurred is that in case of disasters, we know that the country fund and all of that. But we all know that those funds are never enough to cover everything. And some of these disasters do need additional assistance. So you find that those kinds of things, you cannot necessarily be in a position to fund from the National Service Distribution Fund without necessarily compromising the legislation, because the legislation doesn't allow for it. So we wanted to ensure that the legislation provides for that provision to proactively fund certain projects or certain courses without necessarily improving the application. So here I'm going to hand over to the director on my right here. I don't want to say her name. I said that I would call her by her name, Mam Mofe. I would say she's new in the division. She works with me as an assistant. And she is here today also standing in for him in the presentation. So I'm throwing her here into the end. But I hope you'll be able to see her.
Thank you, Chair, and I'm not going to present the amendment, the local amendment. The objective of the bill to amend the amendment bill so that we amend the local act in the also, another objective is to provide for the establishment of the National Local Commission, to provide for the extension of the of the National Service Commission. The Act is very broad in the National Service and the board that has an impact. So to address this matter, Section 2 of the Principal Act is amended to establish the commission to promote the National Service Commission. This can be found in Section 2. The board will consultation with the Minister of the can be found in Section 3.1. The commissioner will appoint such staff members who may be necessary to efficiently and effectively support the boundary conditions of the commission. All that terms and conditions determined by the board and approved by the minister is about Section 3.1. The essential of the board of the commission. The commission's main function is to ensure that the national localities of the state are conducted with all due courtesy and duty according to the constitution, this act, all other applicable laws in accordance with the national localities, which is able to be as well as continue to recognize them. This can be found in Section 2A2. The interests of the new participants in the national localities are under the control of sustained control numbers. Can you bring the chairs on my right, hello, which is your left? We've got space for four chairs here. You can choose that one now. Well, let's put this budget forward. See if it doesn't have enough. I'm sure it's a theory.
Of the community.
instructions of the commission. Now, the commission must also ensure that teachers of every type in the national military are adequately protected. They must also make sure that they promote public knowledge and awareness about the mortality and information that they have. And they can also access any other functions as we do in terms of the minister or the minister on the board, which can be found in the change today. Let's review of the organ of state to conduct national law studies. In the event that the minister decides in the system to come, no tuition license is contemplated in section 30. The minister may, after consultation with the board, license or authorize an organ of state to conduct the national law study for a period not exceeding 80 years. In deciding whether the physical grant contemplated in section 1 is the minister may take into consideration national government plans or priorities which are not achieved in the accountability process for distribution agency. The distribution agency will be appointed and dismissed by the minister after consultation with the board. The members of the distribution agency will be appointed for a period of 5 years. Which they did meet one set on a full-time basis. The distribution agency must adhere to police directives, codes of ethics approved by the board and applicable within the public sector. The DA shall be responsible for receiving, evaluating, verifying, educating applications for grants and distributing grants to court. The number of distribution agency members in each category shall be determined by the minister after consultation with the board to reduce the size of the funds in such categories. Elimination of interdictive functions between the minister and the board. The provisions of the Act give an impression on the current interpretation that both the board and the minister have equal power in relation to certain conditions of life. To deal with this issue, there were a lot of sections that were amended, like section 13A, section 3A, section 2 and B, section 14, section 16, section 17 that is here on the presentation. Finally, the amendment bill will be dealing with the removal of arbitration as a category entitled to be allocated money of the fund. The amendment bill has removed the infrastructure and development program as it has been dominant. The miscellaneous category will reduce proactive funding and funding through funds has been retained but limited to exceptional circumstances. This is all that the bill will be addressing. Thank you, Chair.
Identify yourself with some of the charities
public sense around skill development, around local addition, around broad-based black economic empowerment, and so forth and so forth. So if in the application of this act, where we license the operator to operate the lottery, those objectives are not being achieved, then certainly the state might take it upon itself if it believes it might be in the interest of those objectives to run the lottery itself. But remember, this is a state lottery. The state just licenses someone to run on its behalf. So the point that's being made is that this is just an enabling provision to ensure that it also motivates the third party and is able to ensure that they must achieve this priority. One of the things that I know the chairman of the board probably alluded to this point, that as much as we've got a lottery in South Africa, but we actually don't have the technology in this country to run a lottery. In a way, because we rely on the outside technology. So if there isn't a conscious effort to develop the technology in the country, when are we going to have a lottery market, a lottery market? Because from issues like just printing the paper, it's something that is outside, you know, the country. So can you be thinking about that? So if you're talking job creation and all that, it is important that whoever gets the license to operate, they must actually work towards achieving those objectives that the government is looking at. So the enabling provision really just allows that in the event that upon assessment, these objectives are not being attended, then the state might be in a position to run the lottery itself through an entity of the state. This model is available in other countries. In France, the lottery is run by the state. So there are yet challenges that they face like any other business, but then I don't think that the mere fact that it is a state entity, therefore it means it is going to fail. So I think there is motivation to allow, at least if that situation is required, that the state should be in a position to do that. So the legislation should be flexible to allow that. In regards to the other area where we received a lot of comments is the area around the making the distribution aid of that to be a partner that is on a full time. We received a number of comments relating to that. And one of the issues that was being raised was that if they become full-time persons in the organization, their independence might be compromised because they might be influenced and so forth. We hear the point that is made, but we do not think it is acceptable. I think what we are proposing in this particular case is that we cannot continue to allow for freelancing in a function that is critical to the organization. Education is a critical function in the distribution of funds. So if we allow a situation where it continues to be performed on a freelance basis, then we're not going to provide value and efficient as well. So if you look at, for instance, right now, in charities alone, I mean, the charities don't have a figure, but in charities alone, we receive over like 8,000 applications. So if you deal with those many applications, and you only have people that are waiting on a part-time basis to come and advocate, then it means that, you know, you take the whole year, basically, just trying to adjudicate. So we're saying that it is a critical function. Without that function, you can't distribute funds because somebody must adjudicate. So if there is any slowness in the adjudication process, then the funds are not distributed as quickly as you want them. So we are just saying, we propose that the function be made full-time. The adjudicator will still remain appointed by the minister as individual people from outside, but with the knowledge of the area, and largely also with the knowledge of adjudication, so that they can be employed on a full-time basis. They can come in at 8 o'clock and adjudicate until 5 o'clock and go home. So I think if we look at the figures, our calculations are telling us that we'll never have organizations that wait a year to hear whether they're going to fund or not. concerns that have been raised around NGOs that are dependent, for instance, on the virtual funding, that they don't know if necessarily when I have the funds, because they're still waiting for the application that we put for last year to still be adjudicated. Those things are going to be issues of the past if we've got a full-time adjudication process. So we are saying that their independence will remain the same. We also have models where we have adjudicators. For instance, if you look at big adjudicating committees or tender committees in a lot of government structures, private sector, those are people that are employed but appointed to play that function. And they can overrule even the DG because the big adjudication committee has a specific function. So if independence doesn't get to be compromised just purely because they are receiving they are on a full-time basis. So I think we don't think that this point really outweighs the need for this full-time nature of the adjudication process. We think it's a critical process. In fact, I think it's the most important process because without it, we're not going to achieve any funds. And then the other area that was raised is related to the proposed internal review mechanism. When applicants receive a letter that their application has been declined, they would like to appeal to somebody to say, can somebody relook at this issue, you know? So that avenue is not being interpreted. So I'm finding that they will go to court. So we don't expect necessarily, for instance, the NGOs that will be using money for their own activities that they need to be using the money to go to court to fight the organization or to want the money to be used. But yet the court is actually the process. So what we're proposing here is just a step before court to allow for another body or another structure within the organization to service an appeal of the two committees. Just to look at what the applicant is raising as a concern. Sometimes you find that it's maybe because the organization was declined because it didn't submit some of the court documents in its application, so the application that was made is valid and so forth. But you find that when on appeal or when the matter is being reviewed, you find that those documents may have been submitted, but maybe they were submitted to another area and then the documents do not find each other in the organization. So those kinds of things, I think that can still be rectified within the organization. So we want to allow a situation where there's, I think, a positive outlook to the reception. That you can still convince the people to come back and do that. A number of comments that we received were suggesting that we should have separate tribunals or something like that to be an appeal court. We don't think that from a cost perspective point of view, we don't think that that's a way to go. We think that internal mechanism can work. It has been targeted to pilot already. It is functioning in the organization. The chairperson has created a committee within the organization that receives those applications. And so far, it has been working very well. And so we think that this is a step that will increase the benefit of the application. So the other area that I just wanted to emphasize is around the issues of conflict of interest, which one of the challenges that we need to have is that because they never do this issue in the future, they are only from the sectors for which they oversee the situation. You find that some of them know these organizations or are often conflicted and so forth and so forth. So what we have done is to enhance the provisions leading to conflict of interest in the legislation. So we have got proposals that improve on the conflict of interest issues related to staff members, so that the risk provisions look into that, as well as the pool of people to maintain and work for the organization, where we can actually jump in today and then be coming to the beach to operate the license. So there is improvement in that area. Also in relation to the board members, a specific provision that say what the conduct should be in terms of the area of the services, but as well as the distribution agency. But we do think that the full-time nature of distribution agency is going to also minimize some of the issues because they're also be governed by the policies that govern the staff members of the organization in terms of just the issues of conflict and so forth. The last one, Chair, is really just around the colleagues. There are a number of organizations that apply on behalf of others. So basically, what that means is that others apply because the organization that should benefit do not have the requirements. You know, they don't have like the security or the financial statement and so on. So you find that there are other organizations that apply on behalf. But then there are also other organizations that are in the business of assisting communities, and they will apply on behalf of the community. So those should be the ones who are going to be. So initially we wanted to explore this thing because when you allow a middle person to come in, there's a situation of potential abuse. So you find that sometimes because of reporting and whether in fact they can't do both of those transitions, you find that they are an issue. So we wanted to look at that, and so we have decided to still retain that the conflict could still be funded for the benefit of whatever they are applying for, but it should be under exceptional circumstances where they can show why the organization or the committee cannot apply the code. And we're thinking that you're going to see less of those applications because of the processes that are going to be simplified if the proposal goes through. The process are going to be simplified, the requirements of audited financial statements and so forth, they've been removed. So now things are much easier. So the organization should be able to approach the National Research Board directly instead of using a middle person. And that will also take away some of this fly-by-night consultants that are taking financial statements and all of that to apply. You know, we find a lot of that. And in fact, the local board is now going to focus specifically around that. Because we find a whole lot of financial statements and so forth that are cooked for the people to apply. Because people have now mastered the application process, the consultants. Now they fake everything, and then the application when it comes is very clean, it's good, everything is there. But when you go deep into the details of the documents that need to be, you start picking on some of the details. So I think that the direct application to the National Health Report will be like that, but we still want some of the organizations that really are assisting beneficiaries to be in a position to still apply on their behalf. So that will be a possible that we should be retain. Chair, I'm going to just stop here. And I think in terms of any questions, the chairperson also is here. So we will be assisted by him as well as the team that is on the way. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Because when I look at the policy issues and compare them to a report which we had written in November 2009 with respect to the appointment of chairperson and board members of the National Archives Board, we had raised every one of the issues are, in fact, I think the one was the differentiation, per se, which clearly has become a challenge subsequently. So certainly the briefing you have given us certainly has addressed the EA, what is there, the simplification, the disbursement, and also the conflict of interest that one has. And others here that have made every attempt to address those, and we appreciate that. We're now going to immediately hand over to members of the committee. Many of you have a long, I think, relationship with the National Lottery Board, the one or the other. And I know that you're going to be raising your hand first, Honourable James. So that the Honourable James, followed by the Honourable Adam Merva, and the Honourable Alasta at this stage. Honourable Hill Lewis.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much for the presentation. This is obviously most welcome. There have been two fundamental issues to do with the lottery, and the first has to do with having a robust system whereby it executes its mandate independently of the wishes of whoever has to be governing the country at the time. And so there has to be a robust mechanism that protects its independence. So it's early days, we'll see how far that is done. done, and the accuracy of the system. So those are the two areas that require fundamental change, and we will see whether the proposal here meets that. And here then make three comments. Firstly, on the question of whether the lottery should remain a order of state. Look, it has to do with how well it does work. If you are modeling yourself after SARS, then I'm quite happy with that comment. But it doesn't mean modeling yourself on. If you look at some international practice, I mean, social grants in Brazil are distributed to its commercial banks. Because the commercial banks do it with great accuracy and efficiency. So that's a public-private model for distribution. You want to say that you want to keep it in an organized state, then the question is, who are you modeling yourself on? Because if you model yourself on SARS, then I'm quite happy with that. So that's a comment. The second comment is that I agree that there has to be the professionalization of the adjudication process. What that raises, and to have full-time professionals work in that sector, what that raises is the cost of these amendments. So my question to you is, what is the cost to the state of the amendments you propose? Have you done a cost estimate? What's it look like? If you haven't done it yet, I believe you should, and we'd like to see that. And the third point is that in terms of internal review, your conclusion is that independent review will come at a higher cost. But I'm not convinced. If you choose an ombudsperson model, the way the newspapers do, that has one cost. If you use an independent tribunal, I mean, I don't know what it costs. So I'd like to see what that model is, how much does it cost, and define it and model it in a way that is so as an initial comment on what we have before us, to say that the briefing today is most welcome, the reform of our business is most welcome. There's a large civil order that depends on the distribution of this money, and from old age homes to other important things that have to be done. And so the nation has a great interest in fixing the system, because we know it actually is broken, and it's not irretrievably broken, and it's suggesting changes at this time to fix something that requires some serious surgery. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable James, Honourable
Yeah, thank you. I also would like to welcome this amendment. And I have my question covered in part with something that the Honourable James said, because I looked at the back of the bill where it talks about the financial implications of the state, and it says that the rest will be accommodated within the current financial framework. So maybe I don't, perhaps you could just explain, because as the Honourable Member said, a full-time adjudication group DA, you know, it's surely going to alter the financial, as will, you know, and it's coming from the office itself, I don't know, so I'm just asking, as will an increased work. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Vandermeer, Honourable Kovalka.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I also wanted to raise the issue about costing. Maybe that one must appreciate this amendment. I feel that there are a whole lot of issues that the committee had raised before are beginning to be addressed, issues that were of concern to the committee at general. Chair, I wanted to raise an issue about costing, particularly because I feel the issue is what now is going to be the commission, if I understand well. So, two bodies, you know, but in addition to that, it's proposed that the members of the DA in full time, and I know that that has been part of the suggestion. The proposed tribunal as well that adds to the cost of the parties. And then, of course, the additional members beyond the perfect or proposed beyond the perfect, accommodate the number of policies that you want to provide to the country in the future. So if that raises the question of the second issue, Chair, is on page 15, where you say that the institution is only account to report on a different level, not on the issue of the account of the we appreciate the removal of the RDP in the consensus of the consensus. I do need to clarify what has been the fund that has been allocated for without. I raise this question because government priorities are my husband are generally
constantly referred to NGOs saying in the past that they cannot rely on than most. But, you know, what is the rationale for continuing to include in this language category when it is so ill-defined and so nebulous that it opens the way for grants like that to happen again? In my mind, you don't need in this language. If it's not covered in one of the other three categories, then it doesn't need to get a grant. And perhaps we can look at tightening up the definition of the other categories so that where they are justifiable grants that don't fall within any treatment. And I think here of the grant finance for the 2010 World Cup, that was a justifiable grant that was made from Mr. Lane, and I think it was a worthwhile grant. But most of the controversy has come from that category, and I think a lot of work needs to be done on that one. Then finally, the issue of multi-year grants. A number of NGOs raised the issue that having to reapply every year for funding, which doesn't give any multi-year planning ability or certainty to their programs. And some of the bigger, more professionally run NGOs require funding certainty in the medium to long run because they're investing in building. They're doing a whole lot of expensive things. And so, you know, I'd like to see the inclusion of provision that allows NGOs to apply multi-year funding and to be guaranteed the funding. And not have to reapply every year. Obviously, there needs to be more use, and the application process might need to be longer, but I think that that's important. Therefore, thanks, Jeff.
Thank you very much, Honourable Hilder. I think one of the issues you raised almost dealt with the issue I was raising myself. Earlier at the time, we were purely at the appointment of board members. The issue of the appointment of women came to life. And in the previous episode, like the love of the staff, the colleagues there, whether or not we have ensured that there is a grace period of measures in place to ensure that we do have space and time to do an effective appointment of a new board.
Will be able to relieve up the
office. Mm-hmm.
2019, but you would respond to all of the ones that you've responded to now, and then if you have any feedback, then we'll come back.
It's free.
And yeah, with some reinforcement. I just want to start, not directly going into the question, but I want to start by just explaining the structure in this framework. So that we, you know, when we respond, then we are here that we are really addressing a lot of issues appropriately. Currently, under the current legislation, we've got the National Water Board, which is an organization. That is the NLC. That is the test structure. The NLC has got a board. So the board of the NLD and the National Lotteries Board, they have got the same name, which continues to create the confusion at all times. So there is the National Lotteries Board, the organization whose CEO is Mr. Charles Mambane. Okay. Then we've got the National Lotteries Board, which is the board of the Lotteries Board, as chaired by President Tan. That's the government body. So that's one of the things that we're saying in the proposed amendment. We're trying to distinguish it because, you know, every time when we speak or people speak about the NLB and they speak about the board, there's always a confusion. And then when we confuse the structures, we confuse the function. So there is the NLB as an organization, then there is the board, which is chaired by the chairperson here, which is an oversight body. And then we've got distribution agencies. Mm-hmm. Distribution agencies are adjudication committees. That's what they are. They are adjudication committees. Those are people that sit and look at the application and decide whether this application is worth granting or not. Then we've got the lottery operator. The lottery operator currently is the guy. The lead for the third operator is out. So Kidani is the operator. So Kidani contributes to a fund that is called the National Local Distribution Fund. That's the NLDT. So now the reason why I'm saying this thing is because often when we start talking, we'll confuse this thing. The distribution agencies are not the board. The board is separate. The distribution agencies come in just to adjudicate on the application. The board does not sit in the distribution agency. Those are the places. But I know that if we didn't hear a lot much more better, but we do receive questions from him and when he clarifies, but I think they are all I think okay with that.
But I just wanted to DDG. It is you've got a reprieve. the tea has arrived. Now, I have only had to put in the system once before about the tea break, only once. And I'm going to ask you to follow it again. Please allow the MCs and the ETR people responding to have the first opportunity of getting a cup of tea because, you know, we do want to make good legislation. Okay, we have the first, and you have 15 minutes max, absolute max. Are you listening, Honourable Bill Lewis? But right. Now, we've got people who will be speaking on radio, then you don't call to Honourable Bill Lewis, so then it needs you on the torso. So we would like, it's on the National Lottery Bill, and we need to tell the people of South Africa about this and what it is that we believe the bill is intended to do. And so we need to make you aware of this because we need to process this with names by this afternoon. And when is it actually going to happen? In 6 weeks? In 2 weeks? From tomorrow for 2 weeks. Honourable Wahili in Khosa. Honourable Kwabasa in Zulu. Well, Honourable Mabasa, gosh, I don't know where he is now. and the Honourable Wilma Jane Afrikaans, and the Authentic Afrikaans than I am, and Honourable Fudge in English. Well, you see, now just because I mentioned James, you've missed it. Honourable James, now seriously, we, two or three occasions we've done radio, each member, well, not every member, obviously, but we do try to include as many as we can, and the opposition must be included. We've identified you to speak on the Afrikaans station on the National Lottery Sport to tell them that we're doing this and the intentions of this. In your own words, we're not going to be there hanging over. Yes, and they just go through it. Kota, Honourable Waiiwi. Zulu, Honourable Mabasa. Sosutu, Honourable Adebi. Senga, Mabasa, Afrikaans, Honourable Wilma James, and English, Honourable Fung. There we are. All right, now, what they're going to be doing is, at the end, as we close off here on our deliberations, the portfolio committee secretary will take you through your papers, and you will liaise with him on the matter. Is there any objection? Silence means you don't have one. Thank you very much. So, can we then go straight into the responses from DTI, who has an opportunity to talk to us?
Thank you, I'm going to cover a few issues, and then the chairperson of the board, maybe I should allow to first to address the aspects of these things and attend specifically from the incident, and then I will then.
Thank you, Deputy Chairperson and honourable members. I won't deal with questions that relate to the cost and whatever Well, there was a question on the issue of the tribunal, which actually called the appeals process. The current text that is about the need to be when we were approaching 2009, we decided to have a dialogue of the committee. Local Tamamen Association in order to deal with some of the projects that are in the community, as well as also the traditional leaders. They also sign with us so that we can use their areas in order to educate the public. We also sign an agreement with the Abbas and the Chartered Accountants so that they can deal with issues of financial statements and the like. So we believe that if we do all those things, time frame will be a thing of the past, because it will be just a duplicate of the application, which is very, very, very clear. So we think it is built into the system that we have. And we are in conversation with SAC, looking at how they are duplicating, you know, this text application. And I think we are aiming along, because they have also agreed that they would be part and parcel of the campaign in terms of making sure that the different NGOs and our NGOs can adhere to all the translations and the content. When it comes to the Selenium Catholic, adding the bodies, welcomes the suggestion by PCI and the party that instead of just advocate, make sure that you work for active funding. Maybe the issue that the donor to members said is to be the emergency corner, TC, but if you need it was. Those things, if we look at proactive funding, because I think the board is going to hold to represent the aspirations of Parliament. Because if there is a project, if indeed in recent case there is a project, recently we met and we looked at schools that have not had projects, and we think this is an area where we can approach the minister and say, this is an area in which we can make sure that these schools come in the place that we go and be industrial in rural areas and that. So we feel that the added mandate of miscellaneous, I think, it will make it effective. After all, the duty of the board is not to escape. The duty of the board is to monitor the progress, process of the grant funding and that. So the added function, I think, it will make and let me remind honourable members that we have taken a decision that we no longer accept applications as and when they come. We make sure that it is we make adverts like AR so that we know what we want to achieve, not just wait for somebody who comes with a different project as an FR fund. So such will be an idea. Maggie and Fanny, all the sectors, the sports and the arts, they do IVFA. It was only because of the high volume of applicants, they were only doing one IVFA. But what we have agreed is that this year, in September, October, all the sectors, including miscellaneous, we're going to make access the same one so that we help organizations to do their financial planning for the next year, so that in April we start agitating for the new financial year. In other words, in the new financial year, the organizations will have to apply a project for 2 years, 3 years, maybe maximum 4 years, but it can be 5 years, because if we commit ourselves for a 5 year program, it might the resources that we have are not big enough to get it for 5 years. And these, as the owners remember, will enable NGOs and NGOs to plan so that if we've given them funding for 2 years, they know that when they said yes, it may not be possible for them to get funding, so they will start fundraising. I think if we do that, it will be an added advantage to organizations to plan how they can raise funding and the like, knowing that at least we are committed to fund for 2 years or 3 years. So, yes, monthly funding will be the order of the day, no longer just a one of which I'm trying to confuse the organization.
Thank you.
Yes.
I attempted
to just explain the structures that exist in this framework, and moving directly from that, I just want to give comfort to all of you for us that there isn't a new institution that is in the proposal that is present. Although the proposal in the speak about the creation of the commission, that is just substituting the name NLB for the NLC. So that's what it is. So it's not extra cost, it's just to ensure the distinction that there is an organization and there is a board that oversees the organization. So there is no additional structure that is going to be created. So the only thing that brings us to cost is one, going to be the additional members to the board. Instead of seven, we are proposing seven. So that will put additional cost in terms of the fees that the board members will pay for the meeting. But when we look at the assessment of it, that will be normalized. Because currently, the same members are in all of these meetings, and they come frequently, almost. I think if you look at the frequency of the meetings at the National Hotel Board for the board committees, they are, I think, more frequent than the board members have been before, because of the stress that they keep on. So it's the same members. So the cost will not go beyond the normal assessment. But when we come to the committee, we'll come with an assessment of all of these costs, because the regulation and assessment that you also have on this proposal. So yes, there is. So that's why I can share that as we have to the committee, any additional information that we need to be will do. But we'll specifically do that assessment so that we can give an indication of why the cost will not be as a level if there is a cost. I mean, with any legislative changes and all that, they don't have my cost. The question is whether you put a reasonable cost that you can as a result of the legislation. But we give you a sense of what those costs are so that you can also make an informed decision as to whether you think they are reasonable or not. So that is one, the additional members to the board. Then the full-time adjudicator, that is also going to just reposition the costing. If you just look at the, in terms of the annual fees paid to the current distribution agents, and you calculate them in terms of the real estate and government, we know where to locate them. So we'll show you that mesh to mesh in terms of just if you look at the frequency right now of their seating, I think the one that sits most frequently is the shuttle, because of the number of applications they have. The others like sports, they can afford to fit for a once in a month or just twice because of the number of applications. So we are making the cost against what it would cost for every time. And so let us share that now that the number, now that it will be full-time, so from one person we get more hours. They don't have to be the number that they are. In the sports distribution agency, for instance, we call it 11 hours. In the ad 1.9 and also in Turkey 9. So, but if you call them on a full-time basis, you just don't need this number. These numbers are determined by the application report, for instance, which adds more members to get to 11 because the frequency and also the other issues tend to be that one because of the, you know, a number of members so this thing will actually normalize. So, but we will bring in the cost machines that we have, and then so that we can give you some samples. So then you can see that there is implemented. Yes, because there's other number of other. actually this course on the some of the part-time members, preparation, transport calls, all of those. So I'll make sure you
yes.
question that came from Honorable James about the 4-hour working ourselves with things to take organs. I wasn't clear about the question whether it relates to the area where we say that the state organs could be allowed to operate the lottery, or whether it relates to the NLP. Because when we speak about the lottery operators, we're not talking about the NLP. The NLP is a regulator. So you say the operator who currently then is an external party, is not somebody licensed to operate. So I wasn't sure if I got the question correct, so maybe it can be
that's to take that it's in session
number of years for the license, things have not changed. We got it 10 pounds less. So the license would be for the same period, and so it's not 10 pounds less. So if there's anything that shows some confusion in the deal, that should be corrected and transferred to your confusion cases. Yeah, I think I have covered, we covered all the issues that have been raised in this round. But I just also just want to say that in regards to the structures that are indicated in upfront, there isn't a change. Even in the an agency to allow for a big entity to operate the lottery, that big entity will just be a placement. For instance, if you got Kidani, then it will be a placement entity. But nothing changes. The amount of money that goes into a trust fund still happens like that. It has to be distributed in the same way that it's distributed. So there isn't a change in that figure, in that shape of the organogram. So it still remains the same, except that if the state decides that it doesn't license another person to do it, that entity will be an entity that is owned by the state. And that doesn't change the thing, it doesn't change anything. So that's just the statements that I wanted to put. But also in conclusion to say that the wilderness category, we do a lot of work, especially in the funding and emergency funding. So we think that it's still maintained. In regards to, I think, I'm just reminded that one of the corruptors did raise the issue around the RDT, when we take that category out, what happened to the fund. Currently, there were no funds allocated to that category at all. So the funds are spread across the four categories, which is health, charity, arts, and miscellaneous. So the RDT always has zero allocation because they're not being operational. So, but all of these categories are required to align their funding with the government priorities. And those priorities are also reinforced by the minister on a regular basis to the regulation as and when government adopts new priorities. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much. I think in many ways, members, this is a preliminary engagement. And it also gives you an opportunity to study the amendment bill in front of you, which is extensive. And also to take the opportunity of looking at the gambling report commission that was established by the minister, I think it was in 2009, the report which we got finally at the end of 2011, we then wrote a report and submitted that to Parliament and of course the Minister. Now in that report, it looked at the differences between, you know, the gambling a la casino issue and the gambling in terms of the National Lotteries Board and the different purposes, etc. And it was a very, very extensive piece of work and stuff. And I do think, as we amend this, it will be important if you were to consult that. New members, if they don't have that report or study or our own report on it, I'm sure to speak to the secretary, he will make it available. Although members did get it reissued last year. If anyone who was here last year should in fact have it. So that's that, and I do believe that we need that space to digest it. But I also think that we have to comply with the requirements of Parliament as well. The bill has to be tabled. The bill is only being tabled tomorrow or Thursday. So at that point in time, we will, advertise, etc., and call for public hearings, which we will have in due course. But you will notice from your revised program that your public hearing begins, if I'm not mistaken, on the 13th of August, Tuesday the 13th. That is to comply. It took an extensive amount of time, the State Law Advisor's Office, in Cabinet and elsewhere. But I feel confident that we've got a better piece of, a bill as a result of that extensive study and work that was done and the thing that was finally passed to DG. So, and I think we want to learn from other pieces of legislation the need to remove anomalies, which you indicated here. So, I do want to thank you and your team. I also want to thank the chairperson of the National Lottery for yourself. I know once you get confused, it's too plain for we all be talking about. That isn't a good button. thank you very much for being here. And just before we adjourn the meeting fully, I'd like to hand it over to the Portfolio Committee Secretary just to continue on that line of the lottery and the changes in the program that we've made. Friday the 9th of August.
Involved in that will start with